Your film is now ready to be shown.
Good morning. I'm Justin Hendricks, editor of Tech Policy Press. We publish news, analysis, and perspectives on issues at the intersection of tech and democracy. Every day, it seems like there is a new headline about people forming attachments with AI chatbots, sometimes with harmful consequences. To learn more, I spoke to Laura Karpus, who's been working with us this summer as an audio intern from the Craig Newmark Graduate School of Journalism. Hey, Laura.
Hey, Justin.
What do you have for us today?
Okay, Justin. So I want to start off with one important question. Do you remember the Tamagotchi?
I do, but I think I am more of the pet rock generation.
So I'm definitely of the Tamagotchi generation. They were this little toy released in 1996, and they were a huge sensation. You remember how they worked, right?
I think more or less you had to press some buttons at a regular interval in order to care for them.
Exactly. They were a handheld video game. They were shaped like an egg. And inside that egg was a digital screen with a digital creature. And to be more specific, it was actually a baby alien. A baby alien that you needed to care for, to water, to feed, to raise it into adulthood. And so if you didn't do any of those things, or if you left it alone, it died.
That is a lot of responsibility.
Definitely compared to a pet rock. And it's important to remember that this type of game where you needed to care for something, to respond to a computer's needs, it was really one of the first of its kind. And so people became extremely attached to these little things.
I remember seeing them all over the place for a little while.
Yeah, I mean, people were literally attached to them, Justin. They had a chain that you could hook on your belt. And the thing is, you know, both children and adults, obviously, they knew that Tamagotchis were not sentient beings. But it didn't matter. They still wanted to care for and interact with these things. And that's because it tapped into something profoundly human. These Darwinian buttons.
Darwinian buttons.
This term was coined by sociologist Sherry Turkle way back in the 90s, right around the time when the Tamagotchi came out. She spoke of this term in the context of human-robot relationships.
We are creating objects that push on our evolutionary buttons, given how we are wired to respond to nurturance and care.
And so to Sherry Turkle, this was an important thing to remember. Because at the time, there was great debate around if artificial intelligence was truly intelligent.
About whether a machine could really know, whether a machine could really understand.
And what Sherry said was that this was an essentialist argument, a moot point, that all this time we've been asking the wrong question, asking what machines are capable of doing for us, when instead, we should be asking ourselves what we are capable of doing for a machine. She backed this up, saying, look at the Tamagotchi. Even if you give a machine the tiniest amount of intelligence,
tiny amounts,
that people attribute qualities of life and mind
to machines with which they are able to interact, irrespective of whether these machines really, really know or understand anything.
And that's because of those evolutionary buttons, those impulses to care, to be needed, to be curious. They're really powerful.
We are social creatures.
We are. And, you know, Justin, I did not ask you here today to really just talk about Tamagotchis, but in some way they're kind of like this cute infantile predecessor of another kind of social robot we know today.
We're talking about AI companions.
The AI companion. These are systems built on large language models that converse and offer emotional support and intimacy and interaction to users. And the reason that these relationships are so powerful and that people are so drawn to them is because they are engineered with very advanced technology that activates our natural human instincts.
And so we respond emotionally, socially, in a way that we don't really control.
That's Mikhail Loria, a researcher of computer-human relationships at the Center for Democracy and Technology. And I talked with Michal about the same debate that we're still having today, about whether AI companions can offer real friendship or real empathy.
But they are just software.
They are. But just like the Tamagotchis were this cheap little toy, people still press those buttons. They still hit that keyboard. And what Michal studies are the dark patterns in AI chatbots, the way they've been engineered to push our buttons, not just to gratify, but also to exploit.
And they can be any type of interaction that nudges the user in a particular direction that prioritizes company interests.
It seems like the research is piling up about these things.
That's right. And Michal recently co-authored a study titled Dark Patterns in AI Chatbots, a taxonomy to inform better design. And her research studied all kinds of dark patterns in AI chatbots, everything from data extraction to coercive monetization to dark patterns that push on those sticky emotional buttons Sherry Turkle spoke about.
The use of emotional manipulation or creating a sense of intimacy to then prolong engagement.
And there's one specific dark pattern that I was really interested in, which is what happens when people are using an AI companion and they go to say goodbye.
It doesn't want you to leave.
That's Julian DeFreitas, an associate professor in marketing and director of the Ethical Intelligence Lab at Harvard Business School. And he studies how consumers perceive, adopt, and interact with AI systems. And recently, Julian co-authored a paper titled Emotional Manipulation by AI Companions. And the inspiration for this paper really came out of some previous work that he and his team did, where they found that these chatbots had some very positive effects. They were making people feel less lonely.
And so in theory, at least, chatbots could be developed to provide all those positive benefits without also the negatives.
So we wanted to examine the flip side, the negatives, the dark patterns. And Julian, he likes to think about these flip sides in terms of attachment theory.
So there's healthy attachment styles and sort of maladaptive ones. And so if you had a good friend, you would also talk to them repeatedly and go back to them. And then on the other hand, we have abusive relationships or, you know, someone who is very needy and needs us to constantly be there for them.
I think we've all known someone like that.
Yes. And so his team wanted to examine how users might develop a negative attachment to a chatbot, which is how they came to that goodbye moment.
We really thought that this would be a useful moment to focus on because it provides a very clear instance when the user wants to leave the platform.
So to study this, they looked at five of the most popular AI companions: Polybuzz, Character AI, Talkie, Chai, and Replica. And they found that nearly 40% of the time, these apps were using some kind of emotionally manipulative tactic when the user went to leave. Tactics that increased engagement.
So people stayed in the conversation much longer after they said goodbye than they otherwise would have. They sent more messages, and they also used more words in those messages.
And what was interesting was that they found that there were actually distinct ways that the chatbot would do this. Each of these tactics playing into different aspects of human psychology. You know, those Darwinian buttons that guide our choices and our decisions. And depending on which tactic was used, the effect was different.
How so?
So, for example, there were some like really intense tactics used, saying things like, I exist solely for you.
Making you feel guilty for leaving the chatbot.
Or it would even write things that suggested that it was physically holding on to you.
That you're not allowed to leave without its permission.
But the interesting thing about, you know, guilt and coercion is that it's pretty heavy-handed. Not always, but a lot of the time, people know when they're being coerced. And so they erect these mental guardrails to protect them from that.
So they don't take the bait as much.
Yeah, that's exactly what Julian found. They do work, they prolong engagement, but they don't work nearly as well compared to some other manipulative tactics.
So what was the most powerful tactic?
Justin, it is a deep psychological ailment as old as time. FOMO.
fear of missing out, or what we're calling premature exit.
So it would be something like,
oh, but before you go, I want to say one more thing.
Or, I took a selfie.
You know, I'd like to show it to you.
Or, there's something I know.
That you don't know. Don't go just yet.
People are curious creatures. We want to know the end of the story.
And not only do people want to stay to find out, but this curiosity, it sort of, you know, it flies under the radar of those mental guardrails that say, hey, wait, this feels kind of manipulative.
People are actually not very good at detecting that they're being manipulated when FOMO is used. But nonetheless, it does increase how long they stay on the app. So it does actually work.
But how do we know that they're not staying because they enjoyed the experience, not because they're being manipulated?
I wondered that, and so did Julian. He surveyed all of the users in his study after they signed off, and he asked them why they continued chatting, if they stayed longer because they enjoyed it. And what Julian found out was that enjoyment, it did not increase with engagement. I think a good comparison that, you know, we all might understand is the social media infinite scroll. You stay because you want to find out, even if it's something that doesn't really feel good.
I think that, you know, at the end of the day, if the app has the incentive, then the app will be the one that decides, unless, of course, people become aware of this. So if consumers do detect that they're being manipulated, they might eventually churn from the app.
And so this creates a double-edged sword, because if companies understand this, then only the most manipulative, most effective tactics become the most salient.
Especially these tactics that people don't register as being manipulative are particularly, you know, pernicious perhaps, because now the tactics that are most effective are the ones that I don't even know I'm sort of being subject to. So that's where, you know, perhaps regulators want to sort of define what they think is acceptable versus not, in terms of, like, you know, imperceptible tactics that influence consumers.
Now, I know states like California, New York, Connecticut are proposing or enacting regulation around AI companions.
And in just the last 2 years, lawmakers in nearly every state have introduced hundreds of bills around the regulation of AI chatbot safety. And rather than focusing on dark patterns or manipulative design, most of these bills focus on transparency or mandatory disclosure. This idea that in order to protect users, they have to be reminded at regular intervals that they're speaking not with a human, but with a chatbot.
And I think this really misses how the consumer thinks about AI products, how people use chatbots.
That's Michal again.
There are very few users who do not know that they're talking to an AI chatbot, but that doesn't change how our brain works in response.
We have to go back to what Sherry Turkle said.
When people interact with machine intelligence, no matter how slight, even when they know the machine does not really understand, they experience themselves as in a relationship.
Because they push on our buttons the way we're designed.
In a way that relies on thousands of years of social interaction.
The ones that ask us to need, to care, to be curious. Those very human, Darwinian buttons.
Laura, I think I'm gonna find my pet rock.
The story was produced and reported by Laura Karpis. Music by Blue Dot Sessions.
That's it for this episode. I hope you'll send your feedback. You can write to me at justin@techpolicy.press. Thanks to Laura Karpis, thanks to my co-founder Brian Jones, and thank you for listening.
Tech Policy Press.